So no, listen, I'm not joking. So me and my wife and the kids, we were all at a bookstore, and her phone rang, and she said, "It's this little girl again." And I'm like, "What little girl are you talking about?" She's like, "It's this little girl Croy gave his number to." So I'm like, wait. Why is my son giving out his number, right? So I go through this whole thing with him, earlier in the day. You know, why the little girl calling you? Why you giving her number? He's like, "Oh, my homeboy told me to." His homeboy, Braylon, which I already know they troublemakers, but they good guys, so I love it. Anyway, so the little girl calls again while we out. And the first time, I hung up. And let me be honest, I felt bad for just hanging up on the little girl. That's why I answered the phone, click, banged on her, right? And I felt bad about it. So I'm like, oh, man. So she called right back, and I answered. And she's like, "Hello, little sweet little girl." I'm like, "Hey, how you doing, sweetheart? Who's this?" And she's like, "My name is..." I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, "Well, I'm his father." She's like, "Oh, can I talk to his mom?" I'm like, no, it's cool. I answered her phone. I said, "What do you need, love?" And she said, "Can I talk to Croy?" And I said, she said, "Is Croy here?" And I'm like, "Yes, ma'am, he is." And she's like, "Well, may I speak to him, please?" And I'm like, "Oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry, but you can't. Croy can't even talk to little girls right now. So, call him in about seven to 8 years." And she said, "Okay," and hung up.
I ain't here to dance for you. I ain't here to do a two-step.
Right.
That's just a piece. That was just my end.
I like to picture Jesus in a tuxedo t-shirt because it says, like, "I want to be formal, but I'm here to party, too." I like to party, so I like my Jesus to party.
I don't believe that we can throw a dollar amount at the black community if nobody's mindset changes.
Everybody need to shut up. Let me tell you.
Maybe if you put please at the end, it may be a little better.
I think if you put please after shut up, it takes away shut up.
It's your boy, Mark Hull.
Yo, it's the one and only Dre West, and you're listening to The Realest Show on Air.
And we live in the Christian lifestyle right here.
Right now, you're listening to one of the realest, my bro, the one and only Meech.
Mr. Respect Your Audience Himself.
Right here on Live with Meech Real.
Daddy, I like this.
Yeah. Don't listen to these people, Ricky. You're a winner. You got the gift. Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
If you ain't first, you're last.
See you when you're grown up.
Dad, come back, Dad!
When I tell you, listen, it's funny, but it's some real conversations we gotta have. Listen, and I got so... I have so many questions. Like, I'm not even joking. I have so many questions. First and foremost, she keeps calling, "Baby girl, do your mama know you calling?" And she called late. We was out. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock. So one, baby girl, why is you calling my crib? Who gave you access to a phone? And then it came to me like, wait a minute. What if this little girl got a cell phone of her own? No, don't get me wrong. I've seen it on social media. I'm talking about, I've seen 6-year-olds to 10-year-olds getting brand new iPhones for Christmas, and they wilding out about it. They super excited about the phones. And in my previous episodes, I want to talk about, I was talking about dopamine and how phones are addictive. Literally, I said to my extreme, the equivalent of giving a kid a cigarette, because grown 30, 40, 50, 60, 15, 25-year-old adults are addicted to them. And now we're giving a kid who is still maturing and even figuring out what all this means psychologically is giving us this tool with almost limited access to any and everything. And I just think it's super dangerous. So it got my minds running. So after the conversation with the little girl, I kicked with my son about it. And he was pretty nonchalant. But I watch him. So I'm hip. But it did open up a conversation that I think it's time to have with my...
How are you doing? My name is Meech Real. And this is some of the things that's happening in the news.
So listen, man, I know it's 2020, but let's talk about something that literally happened almost 17 years ago. Almost 17, really like a little between 16 years ago. But one of my favorite players of all time in football, is Terrell Owens by far. He's my favorite player. Not just wide receiver, but he's my favorite player overall. It's between him and Ray Lewis. I loved Ray Lewis's impact on and off the field. Well, let me say not on and off the field. On the field and in the locker room, I think his dynamic was special, and I don't think we'll see that ever again. What he brought to the table as a player and as a leader. In that aspect, Ray Lewis is definitely my favorite. Ray Lewis is just, he was just, first of all, he was a monster on the field. Aside of the, you know, the allegations of murder when he first came to the NFL, but he won. So I'm not here to say, you know, bring that up. I'm just saying football field, locker room, my favorite. Terrell Owens is my favorite player, even though he's a very controversial. Is it controversial or controversial? I've heard it sounds a lot more intellectual when I say controversial. Like I feel like I'm wearing glasses. It's like when you say controversial, it's the equivalent of wearing glasses for no reason. Like when LeBron wore those glasses when he opened up the school and gave that speech, but we ain't seen him wear them again, but I digress. Listen, he's one of the most controversial players to ever play in the NFL. Even to when he won the Hall of Fame, you know, when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame and then not going, and real dramatic guy being on television crying, talking about his life. Like he's a very complicated, and I think that's maybe what adds to why I like him is a little bit of the dysfunction of his character, because he destroyed teams, but he also made them great. He was just such a dynamic talent on the field, but he was a cancer off the field and in the locker room. But I wanted to talk about it. What's interesting is Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens legit having Twitter beef, or they're going back and forth in the comments. You know, Donovan McNabb had been asked, you know, recently about that time, and you know, the time when those two were both playing, and he had some words, and he was extremely passive aggressive in that aspect, and Terrell being very controversial. He decided, no, I'm joking. They went back and forth, which, you know, we expect from Terrell Owens. And it created a lot of conversation that, I ain't gonna lie, it was pretty dope. Now, this is the one thing, one of my other, that whole Eagles team was nasty, but one of my other favorite players, Westbrook, Brian Westbrook, the safety. He was a headhunter. Anyway, he, was recently, you know, on television, and he said that one of the most disappointing things in my career as a player is I wasn't old enough and mature enough to bring Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens together for the success of our teams. This is one of my biggest failures that I had in my career. It's crazy for a man to put that weight on him, especially when you're talking about two super grown men. But at the same time, man, it just showed how toxic the relationship was, on top of the fact that we got to see it. So seeing these guys 16 years later, still not getting peace. And it just, you know, it plays onto what Terrell Owens has always dealt with, and not being able to find peace, but to find excuses to feed on it. It was just interesting, man. I got to say something, fellas. I know y'all listening, and especially Terrell. I know you listening, T.O., bro. You're too great to allow your legacy to be what it is because of your personality. It's a lot of hurt there, big dog. And I just want to reach out to you and tell you, listen, just send me a jersey sign. A San Francisco and an Philly one would be fantastical. But forgive, man. Unforgiveness, bro, is like carrying extra luggage. Have you ever got on a plane with 30 extra bags? It's expensive. And Donovan, man, speak your mind, man. But speaking not on television, bro, 17 years later, you boys should have. I just assume these boys have talked about it. But anyway, it's interesting to see, man, how people really don't chase after reconciliation, even on the levels of success and fame and stardom that both of these men obtained, and greatness, for them still not to find, you know, to achieve, be able to achieve. And I would just assume Terrell Owens is a very, very hard, difficult person to maybe go after this, but to find some reconciliation, some peace in what they were able to achieve even now, it's kind of sad. So That's what's going on in the Twitter sphere, man. My man T.O. and Donovan McNabb still beefing. But I digress. Man, let's go to another story. So let's get into a little bit of science for the one time. Now listen, as of today, the atomic scientists moved the hands of the doomsday clock. It is now 100 seconds to midnight. Listen, 20 seconds closer than its previous setting. So in 2018, the doomsday clock was actually set to 2 minutes to midnight. For those who don't know what the doomsday clock is, it's basically how science equivalent global catastrophe or, some way, shape or form of global catastrophe, in the proximity of just the world, everybody. That's what global means anyway. But yeah, so they say that we are 100 seconds away from global catastrophe. Let me tell you this. I first saw that clock in a movie, never saw it again, never heard about it again, until today, actually. So you're welcome. I'm introducing you to something that's more toxic and out of his mind. But anyway, let me tell y'all something, man. There's a lot of things going on. The Bible even, warns us and talks about there will be, conversations about, there will be rumors about wars. And I mean, we just looking at what's going on with President Trump. Not just his impeachment, but some of the things that we got going on with Iran. Some people are even talking about the housing market. And listen, let me say this to y'all. Do your research, educate yourself, plan. You know what I'm saying? Plan. We can all prepare and try to prepare ourselves as best as possible to try to sustain ourselves. I know the rule of thumb from some people that I've heard talk about is that you should be preparing yourself to survive at least 1 to 3 years without an income. You know what I'm saying? Especially for the 9-to-5ers, that you should be building yourself and planning to withstand some type of changes in the economy, depending on what market you work in, what industry you work in. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, man, that's hard. It's hard to stunt and prepare. And it's like, but I'm trying to stunt because I'm killing it right now. But if something was to go wrong, I don't know. But so listen, man, I bind up any conversation that will cause or provoke fear. God did not give us a spirit of fear, but that does not mean that we should walk around blind to what is happening or what may happen, not for it to change how we live, but maybe to change how we process the information and how we think. So with all this being said, that clock, these are the same people that say God not real. So their track record is not good. You feel me? And actually listen to how they be talking. If they said it in 2008, to 2 minutes, and President Trump keep telling us this is the best economy we've ever had. So I'm confused. I don't know. Somebody lying. Maybe both of them. Maybe none of them. I don't know. I don't care. Anyway, but what I do know, man, is that there is so much fear mongering happening. There is so much content being put out to have you live, spin, think, decide a certain way. And I want to tell you guys to protect yourselves from the information. By one, it's okay with knowing it exists, but understand that that has no true saying of nothing. Nothing at all. Just like a ball dropping don't make your life better. Just like amount of followers don't mean you wealthy. Listen, this stuff is the assumptions in the best way some man can control. And I'm talking about man, like humans, how we try to control information so that we can hold on to some kind of sanity. And I want to tell y'all, man, the God that we serve, the world we live in, life happens for show. But to walk around in fear is literally, that's the doomsday clock. Living a life of fear is literally stealing time from you. So listen, prepare. And hey, listen, you putting $50 aside a week or a month, hey, maybe put $75. Like, I mean, you know your budget, you know what you can do. Don't be out here trying to stunt. If you really want to stunt, put yourself in a position where your family's future, your longevity is being poured into, and that's, if you want to get deep into banking and investments, whatever the case may be, don't just live like tomorrow can't happen, but don't walk around with the burden like that tomorrow, that you have some control over how tomorrow happens. Do that make sense? Even though you do in some places, but How can the Bible tell us, how can you worry about tomorrow when today's have enough problems? Don't worry about tomorrow. That don't mean don't prepare. That means don't worry about something that has never happened. You feel me? Like, it tomorrow hasn't happened. And sometimes we can allow people to put images in our head to literally think, like, and move as if something happened and it may never come. I was watching a video, man, of a woman who's a neuropathologist, and she was talking about how 90% of the stuff that we worry about never come into a fruition. Think about that. So we worried about clocks, we worried about this, when it may never happen, but you've already stolen time of your day worried about something that you can't change anyway, and then to find out it never happened, it's a ripoff. So let's go to the last story.
I just died in your arms tonight.
Oh, look out! Abandoned man! We're too heavy.
Matt, let go.
No, you let go.
Hey, Mr. Peanut, no, you don't. Don't do it, Mr. Peanut. No! Maybe he'll be all right. Maybe not.
So, for this last story, man, it's a little different. I just heard reports, man, that it has been confirmed that the Peanut cartoon figure that we've all grown to love, he died at the age of 104. He died in the ultimate selfless act. He sacrificed himself to save his friends. But listen, what's even worse than that, he sacrificed himself to save Matt Walsh, who's an actor that we don't know who he is. He's been in some things. I mean, we didn't need him in there, you know. He's not like The Rock or, I don't know, and Wesley Snipes. Do we even know if Wesley Snipes has paid back his taxes yet? Why him? Why didn't Wesley let go? Why didn't Matt Walsh let go? I wonder if it's because they're both human and real. And I don't know, man. Maybe I'm being sensitive. It's crazy what we can joke about. We can literally joke about death. But then if we start talking about sexuality, I'm not going to get to it. I talked about it in my last show. I got it. But come on, man. I'm seeing people talk about R.I.P., Mr. Peanut. I'm thinking it's the creator. And then I see this video, and this dude sacrificed himself for real. He literally falls to his death into a car and then explodes. He's a peanut. The fact that we put time and money in the murder of a cartoon character is crazy. It's almost like going back to when they killed Joe Camel with lung cancer, but they still selling cigarettes. I just don't know. Listen, death is not a joke. And I don't know if this is funny or not. I'm so confused. I want to laugh because it's kind of funny, but dog, death is crazy. I don't know. I'm sorry. Slow news day, people. Well, this has been the news. Hope y'all enjoyed it. So let me get into the post, man, because I went to the post, you know, on Facebook, and I actually, you know, just went over the conversation. I told people what I said to the little girl, and one of my followers, man, and I'm not going to say their name, but so this is what the conversation, this is what she said. She said, my son is 9. Well, it'll be 10 in August, and he has his own cell phone. He has one girl that he calls. They talk on the speakerphone about absolutely nothing. It's cute and innocent. I'm sure you have nothing to worry about. So now one of my other homeboys said, who's known me from high school all the way through college to now in adulthood, he told me, man, this either shows your growth as a man or you are becoming a hating parent. The Meech I know from college would have been celebrating his son's great triumph. That meant something to me. Like that stuck out to me. So let's, first things first, let's get into the conversation. It's gonna be tough, man. Y'all gonna be mad at me, but listen. First things first, let's get into the conversation of, she said one of her children, her son is 9, right? And he talks on the phone to one specific girl, and they think it's cute and it's innocent, and they talk on the speakerphone. Now, hear me out. It probably is innocent. At 9 years old, they don't got that much to talk about anyway. But I shared my concerns with her, and let me read what I said to her. She didn't respond. Oh, yes, she did. Oh, sweet. So I didn't make her mad. Okay, cause I'd be afraid. I didn't even see she responded. Thank you, Lord. Anyway. So I said, with all due respect, because people's circumstances are different, and I'm not speaking like I figured it all out, and I'm always right, but I am. I'm joking. I'm raising young men, and I honestly don't see any reason for my boys to need to be on the phone with any girls until they're at the very least teenagers. Girls are a distraction, and what they're talking about isn't the issue. It's creating a climate I don't want my boys having, even with the cell phones. I just think that's way too much. They're just way too young. They talk and interact at school, and that's enough. They'll have all their lives for that extra stuff. When they're out of school, they're talking to us, each other, and going from swimming, basketball, tutoring, or whatever else we decide to hold, we give them to hold their attention. But that's just not how our home goes. So then she, you know, responded and said they only talk about 5 minutes a week, and she's in his class. Her son plays basketball. He's in DAPSEP. He wants to go to MIT. He fooling. He wants to be an engineer. And he said she's just a friend. Hear me out, man. Hear me out. Because I can't say that if I do this, that won't happen. So don't get me wrong. I am not trying to stop the future from a future from happening. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not trying to raise my kids to stop them from being me. I'm not trying to raise my kids from stopping them from having sex before they get married, even though that's my desire. I'm not trying to stop my kids from having girlfriends and doing, you know, I'm not trying to stop them from anything because I know I can't. You feel me? I can't stop them from anything. I believe I can try to hold them and shelter them and do things to slow the process, but at the end of the day, kids gonna get to a certain age where they're gonna have a little more freedom, and their decision making is going to tell what they do with that free time. So I can shelter them and hope that when they don't get freedom, they don't go buck wild, or I can try to take everything from, you know, there's so many different ways, but for me, I'm not trying to stop anything. I'm trying to build a foundation for them so that when they get to a certain age, they're making decisions based off of the foundation. And that's what I want to talk about, is the foundation. Fellas, like my homeboy told me, and this don't mean that you can't have girlfriends and kids won't have girlfriends and become billionaires, and that it doesn't mean anything, but it's about a foundation. You get what I'm saying? Like my homeboy said, my foundation, I was excited. No, it was a part of me that was, you know, proud. Hey, you know, my son, you know, in the girls, that's what's up. That's a cool thing. Especially, I'm just going to be 100%, especially in these times, being a man, being a Christian man, I can't pretend that I'm not happy when my son takes on these characteristics. Now, I'm about to go way left, man. Me and my man, my homeboy Doug, man, was talking, and he exposed something to me that was so true about how the world has used certain labels to take us in the direction we weren't prepared for. Because I was about to say, you know, being a heterosexual man, right, makes me excited to find out when my son is having heterosexual desires, right? That's what I would have said. But my homeboy was saying, like, listen, man, even that language isn't biblical, because when you say that you're heterosexual, you're creating a division. You get what I'm saying? So because I can say I'm heterosexual, that opens the door for someone to say that they're homosexual, pansexual, binary, transsexual. Like, we've literally accepted and adopted the language of man that has led us to opening up the gates and the doors that now people are literally saying they have a choice on their biological makeup. Because we are in a place where we can make the technological advances, and bro, you can do so much that now that I have a choice, I can take the place of God in making this decision. And you can't assume that I'm something because of how I was born, because now I have a choice. Now, that's a whole deeper conversation, and I'm not going there, but I want to talk about foundation, and I can't ignore this reality. So when my homeboy exposes to me, he said, listen, why are you saying you're heterosexual? You're a male. God created male and female. Despite all the sciences and not every and everything that they're trying to do, it takes a man and a woman. You know, even in nature, so in some cases, in animals that are asexual, where it's just one of them and they can give themselves pregnant, there's still a male process and a female process. There's still an egg, and there's still a sperm that fertilizes. The processes are different because of how amazing and creative God is to make it happen. But there, this one thing that on the base remains consistent, male, female, right? And what has taken way is we've allowed us to say things and walk into an era where now we're letting these words make the decisions. So the foundations are being broken and torn up and changed. So I say all this because I'm not heterosexual. I'm a man. I'm a male. And there are certain things men are legitimately, naturally given that I have no choice in the matter. I had no choice in the matter of being black. I had no choice in the matter of being the height I'm at. I didn't have no choice of the texture of hair or the length of hair or the style of my hair, the color of my eyes, the sound of my voice, the ability or the lack of ability for me to be able to sing. I had no choice in the matter of me being able to play football or liking football or basketball. There are literally things that I was born with a baseline trait. And I believe that as a man, that this is a baseline. And I'm saying all this because now here we go. Let's talk about the foundation. The baseline, I'm a man, right? What makes you a man? This is also why I had to go through all that and talk about the foundation, because us as men have allowed, not just saying that we're heterosexual, but we've allowed a narrative to come into what identifies us as male, which in a reverse or in a perversion of the lack of understanding of us communicating it properly, we've allowed our sexuality or who we have sex with to become our identity. Because the foundation of what we are, we have rooted in sex, like heterosexual, right? So who I have sex with is my identity. No. You know what I'm saying? That has nothing to do with you, because you were born a male or a female. And I do believe a male is a male and a female is a female. I don't believe a female is a female because she cooks or because she has sex with men or because she has long wavy hair, right? And I don't believe a man is a man because he can beat people up, he can have sex with women, he's real strong and muscular, and you know, he got a real cut buzz hair. Like it's things that we have associated with identity that has led us down a very dark and dangerous and confusing time. So I wanted to have this conversation. It was really, and I don't know, it got deep, because I thought you were joking about your son, man. Look, I ain't trying to hear all this. No, for real. I think about this because I'm raising three young men, and I thought about when I was growing up, what made me feel like a man, and how long did it take me to realize that it wasn't it? I remember growing up, man, and I'm just going to be totally honest, man. I thank God for my wife. I thank God for deliverance. I thank God for him just being in the midst of the fire and being with me, speaking to me. But I'm going to be honest, and I'm hoping my fellas is listening. Ladies, I want y'all to listen too, because this is some of the little boys that you may allow your daughters to talk to, or that I want you to know that boys be on tip, especially if they're not raised with the proper foundation, because there are some animalistic traits that we have taken on that we identify that makes us male, that makes us men, which doesn't make us men. It means that we are male. Our physical attraction, I believe that's what makes us male, right? Like the genitalia, that's what makes us male. But what makes you a man is a totally different conversation. And your identity has nothing to do with your sexual nature. I think your identity has more to do with your character, who you are, what you've done. And as us as believers, my identity is in Christ. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, when I was coming up, what made me feel like a man was having sex and women wanting to have sex with me, and me not loving girls, but girls wanting to be with me. Me manipulating chicks, me sleeping with them, me being able to use them, you know, bragging about how many chicks I got. I remember going to the mall and getting, oh, I got 15 numbers. Hey. I remember really liking a girl, and my homeboy called me. You know, he kind of played me. Don't get me wrong, he played me. But he called me with her on three-way, but didn't tell me, and he asked me about her. And because I wanted to be a man in my mind, I couldn't tell him that I cared about her. I'm like, oh, man, I ain't cuffing no chick. You know, you feel me? You know how we out here? You know, the stupid little sayings guys got in the three little, you know, the little acronyms to degrade women we could use. And I'm like, yeah, man, you know, I'm chilling. I ain't worried about no chick. And then I heard her on the other line, like, for real, Meech? And, you know, even in that time, I had to blow that off. Like, my dude was like, you good? I'm like, man, there's a billion of these women out here. And I had this bold mentality. So that built me coming up where I was confident that the fact that I was still having women sleeping with me, I was still big enough because I played football, right? So I was still big enough and strong enough and tough enough to beat somebody up, because we walk around and we, you know, you mugging somebody and people talk about they got hands and they a dog anybody, like that makes them a man. Like, there's people that's literally walking around and can fight everybody but they're themselves and are in terrible situations, but they're okay with it because they can fight somebody, because that makes them a man, or they can screw somebody. So I'm literally in this mindset feeling like I'm a man because I was screwing. I had a job so I could pay a bill. And my total aspirations in life was to have sex, have my own car, and I was able to defend myself physically. So that came into either, you know, having guns, you know, being tough around dudes, smacking some dudes up a couple times coming up. Like, that was my identity as a man. And I had, and as I got older, and I, you know, and I'm talking about older as I, like, I peaked. I'm talking about 28, 27. And I'm just going to be honest, I think when you turn 30s, when you just start growing up, when, like, I feel like I'm a man now, you feel me? And it's just because of the revelation of becoming 30. But anyway, so I got to look back at my life and I'm like, dang, I spent the greater half of my life feeling like a man because I was having sex and living this life with no purpose, no contribution to the world for real, but I was content because I based me being a man off the fact, off of the reality of a lion. You know, a lion, you know, they're male, or they're, you know, because they're dominant. They run and they really be raping them women, but they, you know what I'm saying? Like, the world of the animal kingdom, we live by that, though, that nature, to become and feel like we're men, and we raise our sons, and we're raised where a girl like you, like, ha, that's my boy. Hey, yeah, my boy ain't no slouch. Or you get in your first fight, you come home like, what happened? Oh, I knocked him out, dad. Oh, my man. And now your whole life, those are the building blocks of your character and who you are, is knowing that you're tough physically, and that you screw around, and we come up dogging chicks. It's fun to dog chicks when you're a boy that thinks they're a man, because you have the ability to manipulate and take from someone that literally just likes you. Like, it gets different. And don't get me wrong, women have their ways. I'm talking to my fellas because I ain't never been a woman. So I have no idea. I never been a woman. I could never be a woman. So I don't know nothing outside of watching my sisters and moms and aunts. And, you know, I don't have no inner experience, but I got 33 years experience of being a boy. I got like 25 years experience of being a boy that thought he was a man because I was living off the basics of being a male animal. And then the latter half, I'm becoming a man and raising young men to be men. Same reason why I think that sometimes men struggle in school, because it's not cool to chase after intelligence, to go to tutoring, to sit in the front, to learn. You a nerd, but it's cool to be out here selling drugs, scamming and getting all the chicks and looking like the dope man. Like, it's cool for that. But it's not cool being the guy that, you know, see somebody getting bullied and be like, hey, my man, chill out. And being this is what's even more interesting. I'll talk about the foundations. Listen, imagine if your son or you can't fight. Think about that. What happens? Can you be a man and not fight? Like, if you get beat up, does that mean you less of a man? And listen, we base these things off of that. So then I think about, man, growing up, and my oldest son, who is strong as everything, the strongest little kid I know, and he's one of the most sensitive, and he doesn't like hurting people. He got it in him if you push him hard enough, but you got to really get him there. And I remember at first, when I first started raising him, I was mad of his character. I was mad that he didn't like just want to beat people up. And I was proud that my middle boy just loved to snap and put his hands on people like me. He just a little hothead. He just, because he a man, he tough, he beating people up. And as I matured, I thought about, one, how Christ moved and how somebody could walk around with all the power in the world, but walk around with the humility, the meekness, the tenderness. It just changed my perspective. Like, almost to the point where I watched my son, knowing that he could hurt my middle boy, but sometimes he's even patient with him and lets him kind of get down on him sometimes, where I have to fuss at both of them. But, you know, but I watch him like, man, it's something to say about somebody who has the ability to win the fight, but never is the one chasing after one or starting one. It says a lot about where that person's heart is. And then I think about walking around in this world and seeing so many angry young men, young black men, seeing so much aggravation and animosity amongst men, and wonder, is this because this makes them feel like they think they're man? They're men? So how many of us walk around with the hurts and the pains of growing up and won't talk to nobody because we got to be hard because that makes me a man? So I just wanted to share my thoughts, man, because now that challenged me. Now I'm raising my men to, one, be able to defend themselves. And if they're not born with the innate ability just to want to punch somebody if they hit them back, you put them in karate, you teach them this, you tell them to defend themselves, you tell them to stand their ground. But I've also been raising my boys to think. Because think about it, man. You know, your kids are young and we raising them a certain way. Somebody hit them back. We beat them down and they beat you down and y'all keep fighting. And these are the things that we grew up and made us men, we thought. But I think about it like this. Imagine a kid that's punching somebody because they mad at the world and nobody gonna love them. So if they hit you first, the world can't hit them. So they reject before they being rejected. And I think about it. Imagine, especially now in these times where people, you know, you used to fight somebody and y'all become best friends. And nowadays people can't get to the point of becoming best friends because if they beat you up or you get beat up, they kill you. You get beat down, you get murdered, and people lose life. So and you was like, oh man, these are extremes. These are extremes, but the reality of it is that we have to stop identifying what a man is by who he has sex with and who he can beat up, who he can intimidate. And even in some cases, how much money he got. Because women make a lot of money, and there's some women out here that can beat up a man. And there's some women that's sleeping around and having sex with a bunch of people. And now they feel like that makes them men. Or like, it just gets different, man. But I thought about it like, man, imagine the situation. Matter of fact, I saw a father. Let me go to that. I saw a father, his son was having problems. The boy was beating up on his son. He kept fighting him, and it was frustrating the dad to the point where the dad went to the school like, hey, man, what's going on? This is a problem. And you think about that like, oh, like me. So I'm messing with my kids. I'm going up to the school, and I can't beat up the kids, so where your daddy at? I'm about to pound on him. Like we about, I'm about to dominate y'all to show y'all where we at, right? This father doesn't do that. He goes and he finds out about the kid, of course, which in a lot of cases, he finds out the kid don't have a father. So the mother's doing the best she can, but that means if a kid is being rejected by a father or he's absent of father's interaction and presence, I'm telling you, from a kid who had both parents but not in the same home and there were some difficulties in that, even in that sometimes, you still create anger in the child, hurt, frustration, confusion, animosity. The absence of a father creates the presence of anger, hurt, and animosity and pain. If it ain't every single kid, it's most. Especially when the parent is still alive, but alive or dead, the lack of a father in the home births anger, hate, pain, resentment, and sometimes can even breed violence. But anyway, he finds out this kid doesn't have a father. He befriends the kid, takes the kid to the movies. Him and his son become best friends, and now he's mentoring both. He's mentoring the other kid. And I thought about how powerful that was. I said, man, but imagine if he just would have taught his son to beat the kid up. You know, everybody got the cousin from the hood or the cousin that, you know, had a little rougher, you know, background. And you bring the kids up there and they beat the boy up that's been beating up on your son, right? That's revenge. Told you, guy. Yeah. But as I've grown to be a man, I began to learn that one of the most masculine things you can do is think before you act and love someone in a place where they give you every reason to hate them. And that's why I go back to saying my identity is in Christ, because Christ didn't live a life of beating people up and smacking people around, even though he had to throw some flips and tables over. But even his reason of showing that type of aggression was the righteous indignation of how people were treating the church. Not even himself, his own flesh. And then in the back end, when he was beaten and accused of, you know, and made fun of and hurt, when he had all the power to stop everybody, all he did was love them and forgive them. Like, his whole labor of walking through being abused and actually put to death, one of his final acts was forgiving somebody. Was legit forgiving somebody. One of his other, before, even within the midst of that, forgive, Lord, forget him. I'm talking about speaking on the behalf of someone, which first takes understanding. So I start looking at God and how Christ lived and how he moved and said, these are the characteristics of a man that I want to identify as. So I identify myself as man, not because of the genitalia, not because of who I'm sexually attracted to, not because of the money I make, not how tough I am, because I love first. I try my best to love first, to forgive first, to understand first, and to move in a way where I want to pull people up, not make everyone feel smaller when they're around me. And I want to raise my men to look at life under the same funnel. Don't mean they won't make different choices. But while they're in my house, I can create an atmosphere that I'm living by, which builds a foundation of how they'll live and how they'll see the world. I'm not going to be more proud of my son for a little girl wanting to call him. I'm going to celebrate them and be proud of them when they bring home 4.0s. When they doing something that they not good at it, but they not quitting. When they did get in a fight with a kid, or they was going to get in a fight with a kid, but they walked away. Somebody was making fun of them, and they stepped away and they breathed and they came back and they found a way to befriend the kid. Or they found a way just to hold their head. Like I celebrate my sons for just being smart and being nice to each other, loving on each other. Not just been there great in sports. And I'm saying this, fathers, kids, and I'm talking about grown kids, young, whatever. Imagine being a son or raising a son that only feels like his parent only loves them when they putting a ball in the net or putting it through a goalpost, or on a hockey field, I don't know, but lacrosse, whatever sports y'all be playing. You know what I'm saying? Or a son only gets the love and the validation from his father when he makes 100K. When he marry a bad chick and she got this type of body and like or he beating somebody up, beating the brains out of somebody. Imagine that being the only time he get the love from his father. Imagine that being the only thing he remembers. Imagine him wearing Jordans is the only way he knows his father loves him when his dad buy him the J's. Or the only time him and his dad have a good talk or kick it when they sitting somewhere and a girl walk past with a big booty. He like, hey, y'all have y'all little, you know, peanut gallery session. Think about it, man. What foundation are you building or you help building with your son? And what foundation do you have to make you think you're a man? Do you think you're a man? Like, why do you think you're a man? How'd you get to that? What's the model? And has that model gotten you where you want to be? And is that model something you want your son to follow? You want your son to follow the model of having a bunch of baby mamas, a bunch of chicks on him, you know, chicks chasing him down because he good looking and he the man. Like, come on, fellas. And have we seen the fruit of those lifestyles bring us peace, understanding, and growth? Has it helped the community more than it hurt? Imagine the foundation of a man to put down a woman in a world where a man is looking for a good woman that they have literally put down the entire growth process of that young woman. What does that do to the psyche of her? What does the foundation of looking like a drug dealer or being a drug dealer and beating people up do to the environment that all these people live in, all the drug dealers and all the tough guys live in? What does that do to the environment we live in when it talks about where are all the good men at? And does it put more men in the homes with the kids or in prisons or just on the block? Or just at odd, like it's so many dynamics, and there's no way, it's impossible for me to talk about them all now in this one setting or in one setting at all, because there's so many things. But I had to have the conversation. Listen, the foundation of a man, I feel like overall how we honor a man from the music we like. Oh, we like him because he got money, he got the chicks, and he keep you know, the guns on him. If somebody mess with him, he'll kill him. Like the foundation of a man. I think what we've allowed to identify, how we've allowed to identify ourselves has led us to exactly what we have. And for some of us, and for many communities, for many single parent households, it hasn't been good. I mean, for real. How you identify yourself as a man says a lot about what type of man you are. And I just had to be honest, man. I grew up and I was very content with just having sex and having a job. I spent 24 years chasing the animalistic desires of a male. And it was a waste of time. It was a waste of opportunity and experience. There were so many experiences I could have had with people, but I was only there to have sex with them. So that's all that mattered. And that's all that really is remembered, which sucks. That God blessed me to be on this earth to meet all these people. And all I remember is the carnal aspect of what I wanted from them. I missed out. There's a lot I didn't learn because I was just walking around like a lion. Like, we compare ourselves to animals, but we stand up upright and we have minds, and it's the reason why God made animals and made us different. And I'm going to do my best not to allow my children to be forced to live with that type of mindset, live in that type of world. So listen, don't get me wrong. Will they talk to girls? Probably. Will they hang out with their homeboys and have to figure it out? Absolutely. But the foundation I'm building is that they know that they're men because they're smart, they're honest, They live, they're chasing after their purpose. They love God. They love their parents. They love and respect their community and their contributions to everywhere they go. They're a light everywhere they go, from the classroom to the mall. Wherever they go, they are giving and they are honoring, and they are peacemakers. The Bible says, blessed are the peacemakers. That I'm building a foundation for them to be men that will not identify themselves by how many women they sleep with, but how they treat every woman around them, from their mothers to their aunts to the young ladies they meet growing up. And not just how they meet the ladies, but how they treat their brothers, how they treat each other, how they treat people around them. How do people feel when they're around them? Imagine if it was cool, right? Imagine if it was cool to big up your brother, to make your brother feel good, versus stunting on your mans, stunting on people, having more than everybody around you. Imagine if it was cool that everybody around you, not just ate because y'all all hustling, but everybody around you was able to progress because you shared information and y'all was chasing the same things and it was all legal. I don't know. But let me get off this soapbox before I tear y'all apart, for real, before I really get in my bag. For real, man, the foundation of a man is key, and how you identify yourself as a man says a lot about the man you are. Man, let's go to Meet Your Mike Preach. I pray this helped. Hey, man, I really, really appreciate y'all for listening to today's show, man. It's going to be a lot more coming from that area, from that vein, man. My passion has matured and shifted a bit, you know, and I want to talk to my fellas. I want to talk to my sons. I just want to have the conversation, man. And this was funny. It wasn't planned, but it turned into this being one of the first shows where I'm going to start discussing this stuff. So I really appreciate, man, you guys listening and checking this out, man. This was really dope. If anybody is interested, man, well, first and foremost, please subscribe to the podcast, man. Comment, hit some stars for your mans. Leave some comments under this, man. Follow me on all social media at MeetReal. And you can email me at thechristianpodcaster@gmail.com. As well as you can email me at fathershipstrong. So that's fathershipstrong at gmail.com, or the Christian Podcaster, either or. And I want to send you something, fellas. I want to email y'all something, man. Just a gift from me to you. Hope you enjoy it. I pray it helps. So yeah, man, I really appreciate that. But with all that being said, so look, the way you identify yourself as a man says a lot about the man you will be and the man you are today. So I just did a quick, I'm talking about, this is easy, just a quick little Google. Hey, went to Google University for about 5 seconds. What does the Bible say about a man? And several scriptures came up, and I want to share every single one of them. Not every single one, because I'd be here all day. I want to share several of them that I think is pretty dope. And that kind of goes with what I'm saying. I'm actually going to share. Yep, I can share the direct link. I'm going to share a direct link in the description where you can click on it and it'll give you the same thing. So I'm actually using Bible info, openbible.info. And it says the role of a man. In 1 Timothy 5:8, it says, but if anyone does not provide for his relatives and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, of course, in context, this is not just talking about paying money. This is not like there's more context to it. I mean, just in one way, shape or form, preparing, like I talked about earlier, instead of stunting, why don't you put some money in the savings away? It's like, let's look at how we can expand this money, how, and not just save, but maybe even grow and invest, as well as maybe pop up over somebody's house and help them move. You know what I'm saying? Like, try to find ways to be a contribution, not just to the people that you are related to directly, but your environment. But before all of that, your household got to be right. You can't be out like what my man say. You can be a hero in the world, but a villain in your own home. So you got to be careful of that. So 1 Peter 3:7 says, likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way. Remember I talked about earlier about just being understanding is powerful, because it takes away the bitterness and it helps you not walk around being self-righteous and a victim, but compassionate and have empathy. It's the reason why I believe the reason why God put himself in the flesh in, as in Jesus, is to gain full knowledge, full understanding of the human condition and how it deemed him worthy to redeem us. And putting himself directly into what we had to what we have to deal with to gain full understanding. I think that's major. These are characteristics of Christ. That's why I identify myself as Christ. It makes me a man because I love God. Loving God is masculine. It's super masculine. I'm not saying women love women. That's too. But I'm not talking to y'all. I'm talking to my guys. Anyway. Showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Say it again. Fathers, it says likewise, husbands, live with your wives in an understanding way, showing honor to the woman as the weaker vessel, since they are heirs with you of the grace of life, so that your prayers may not be hindered. Listen, weaker vessel, they may not be able to pick up a brick, but some of these chicks is picking up bricks and you can't pick up a brick. Or some of these women are out here changing tires and you dudes ain't, y'all ain't doing nothing, but I digress. There are different capacities for man and woman, and we have to honor that, not by making them feel beneath us, but understanding and loving them and understanding that they have a connection to our prayer life. That's what this say. That's what 1 Peter 3 and 7 say, but I digress. Psalms 1:1-6, it says, blessed the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and his law he meditates on day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaves does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. Listen, it says, blessed is a man that walks not in the counsel of wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but delights in the law of the Lord, and he meditates on his meditates day and night. It says he's like a plant rooted by streams of water that yields fruit. Listen, man, if you a man, that's why I love when they say man of God, right? If you're a man, you got to be rooted in the word. Just like I talk about in my videos, about my fathership videos. How do you become a father without understanding who the father is? And there's nobody more masculine than God. More masculine, and I'm not talking about masculine like male, you know. Anyway, when you get real deep about understanding what God is and not trying to make him human, Jesus was a man, and the things Jesus did made him a man. And notice that Jesus did not have sex and did not stunt on people with his wealth and what he did have and what he didn't have. And Jesus watched, like Jesus, the life of Jesus shows you the lifestyle of a man. I think that's very important. So standing your word is a manly trait. Anyway, 1 Corinthians 16:13 says, be watchful, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. Now, of course, all these scriptures, you got to get context because they're talking about something directly. But when it comes to applying this stuff, these traits, I do believe, still stand firm in what I'm talking about. For 2 Timothy 3:17 says that the man of God may be competent, equipped for every good work. Ephesians says, for the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its savior. Listen, fellas, don't think you're Jesus. You just relax. But I in the last one, man, it's so much, man. Well, first, let me do Proverbs 22:6. It says, train up a child in a way that he should go. Even when he is old, he will not depart from it. Foundation, fellas. Train up a child in a way he should go. You got boys. I mean, even your little girls. I mean, I think it's tough to be watching these little girls singing Cardi B, man. Well, she not the role model. She probably a better mother than she is an example for the world. Her daughter probably don't listen to her stuff. I don't know. I don't listen, so I wouldn't know. But think about it, man. You raise your men up to be men by understanding what a man is. Even when he strays away, going through his youth, being young and dumb and, you know, rebellious, that foundation matters. I grew up in a foundation, at the very least, of a man worked, right? He had a job, and grew up in a foundation when I was prayed for and covered. So after I wilded out and did all my, I was still felt a pull back to the house of God, back to getting, being a believer, and always working. Those were things that was instilled in me that I never departed from. So there was one more. Oh yeah, so Colossians 3:19 just says the same thing. Husbands, love your wives and do not be harsh with them. Think about, and I'm, this is to wives, but we can apply this to just women in general. Fellas, dogging chicks is not masculine. It's kind of weak. Not kind of, it's weak. But growing up, you think it's cool being a boy, treating, lying to chicks, playing the game. It's weak. So husbands, definitely don't be harsh. That goes back to that trying to being understanding. Just the way God loves the church and understanding that we be out of our minds sometimes, but still gave his life to redeem us. Your wife might be out of her mind. One, it's a little bit of your fault. And two, she was like that when you married her. And three, still don't give you the right to be, to dog her out, to do things because she not doing what you like, you know. And we get into that, you know. You know what I'm talking about, fellas. But I digress. Listen, I say all this to say this, and I'm going to say it again. The way you identify yourself as a man says a lot about the man you are today and will be. And we got to fix the foundation right. Y'all been listening to Live With Me Drill. I pray this helps.
Clean Air Media.